Okay, we just left Skukuza Rest Camp, and today, August the 23rd, 2016, we are going to make a podcast of the route along the Sabi River from Skukuza to Lower Sabi. And that's probably the busiest road in the park, and not without reason. Very popular, very good for seeing game. There's usually a lot of stuff along the river, and hopefully we'll have some exciting experiences to track what we see.
Yes. Yeah, it's our second day in the Kruger. Looking forward to the trip.
Okay, so we're setting off on the road. It's a tar road that takes us all the way from Skukuza to Lower Sabi. It's a distance of 42 kilometers, but when one considers the driving speed in the park, the maximum you can do is 50 kilometers an hour, but if you're game viewing, you tend to average much slower, 20, 30 kilometers an hour, because you're often stopping and looking at things, taking your camera out, that sort of thing. So you've got to give yourself a good couple of hours to make the distance. So we might not have time this morning to go all the way there, but halfway along the route is a tea room and picnic site known as Mkushlu, so we might make that our end destination. Okay, we've pulled over at the side of the road because there's a nice view through the vegetation of the river, and there's a lot of bird activity down in the river. There's a grey heron, quite a tall wading bird with a long dagger-like bill, yellowy-orange bill, and lovely black and white plumage on its neck and head. Stands about a meter above the ground. And a lot of other Egyptian geese came past, but Pokela just picked up a pair of bushbuck in the undergrowth. How would you describe those animals?
It's two bushbucks, a male and a female. The female one does not have horns, and the male one has horns. Yes, am I right?
Yes, and the horns are sort of, they're not straight, they're spiraled, okay. Twisted, not quite as dramatic as a kudu, but a sort of smaller version of that. And the female is a sort of pale brown color, quite like your Bambi character, although Bambi was a deer and bushbuck are antelope, but the male is a more sort of chocolate brown, with lovely white markings on its leg and underside and rump. So they are quite beautiful and quite shy little animals, not as out in the open as your commoner things like impala and wildebeest. They tend to sort of stick to heavy undergrowth, hence the name bushbuck. And they're quite common and quite widespread around the country. Down in the forested regions of the Southern Cape you get them, along the east coast, and in the bushveld zone, like here in the Kruger National Park. Okay, so we've only moved on about another 20-30 meters, and the nice thing about this route is there's a lot of little roadside pullovers where you go off the tar onto a dirt route that gives you a view over the river. And at the last previous stop, we were talking about the grey heron, aquatic wading bird that feeds on fish, and it's quite a big bird, but it dwarfs into comparison with its cousin, the Goliath heron. And we've picked up a Goliath heron, named after the biblical character who was an enormous giant. And this bird stands close to 2 meters tall, a meter and a half to 2 meters tall, and it has a magnificent purpley color on its neck and head and underparts, and then its upper part is a slate gray. So it's striking plumage, but yeah, an enormous bird, and I think you were quite excited when you saw it just now, Pokela.
Yeah, been exciting, but very tall, yeah.
And they all feed on fish, so they've got these dagger-like bills, so you can imagine them thrusting that into the water, going through like a knife and spearing the fish that they feed upon. But there's a lot of exciting little birds in the undergrowth. I've picked up some blackback puffback, and there's some little beaters that are feeding. Now, little beaters are amazingly colorful little birds. They've got a curved bill. They're small, probably not much bigger than a person's thumb, but they're a beautiful green color above and yellow below, with a black bib. And they are birds that feed from perch, so they, as the name suggests, they feed on bees and insects and that sort of thing, and they'll perch and then they'll fly and catch some food and then come back to that perch. So we should be able to see them, although they're not in view. You can hear them twittering, but although they're not in view at the moment, they'll soon come back.
Yeah, there's a herd of impalas ahead of us. I hear people saying that the impalas are the McDonald's of the Kruger. Why are they saying that, Chris?
Well, there's two reasons. One is because they're the commonest mammal in the park, so they're on every street corner, so around every bush. We've driven past quite a lot of them, and we haven't stopped to talk about them because they're so common. But in actual fact, they're amazingly beautiful animals, and I'll come back to that. But the real reason they're called McDonald's is look at their bums. On their bums, the animal is a sort of a rich chestnut brown on top, then a paler brown on the sides, and then underneath you've got a third color, pale, almost white. But on the behind is a striking black M that looks exactly like the M on the McDonald's sign, except it's not yellow, it's black. But against the rest of the color of the animal, you've got this big bright M. So that is why the impala is known as the McDonald's of the bushveld.
Oh, okay. So they are walking. I think there are 10 here. What do they call them when they're walking? Are they? It's a herd of impalas.
It's a herd of impala, and a herd of most of the antelope. But what's interesting about an impala is they form different types of herds. In what's known as the rutting season, all the males get together and they fight for the right to take possession of a herd of females that they will breed with, and they become the sort of alpha male and have their herd of harem of females. And then all the losers, all the other males, they get together and form a loose herd, of a bachelor herd of the sort of second-rate males who weren't able to get their mates. But at certain times of year, when hormones levels are down, then they form more sort of loose bands of herd. So this herd is predominantly females with one or two males. So it's sort of mixed group at the moment, but that's what we're seeing. One thing about impala, and as in most antelope, is that the males have horns and the female don't. The impala is a type of gazelle, so it's a sort of medium-sized animal. It's quite nimble and fleet-footed, and they probably stand half a meter to three-quarters of a meter above the ground at shoulder height, and they've got a long, elegant shape, long, thin neck, and they're very graceful animals. And the male's horns are slightly twisted, so not straight, and probably about half a meter in length when they're fully grown. And the young males are known as pen horns because the horns come through straight, and they look like sort of pens that have been stuck on top of the head of the young male. And then, as we said before, the females don't have any horns at all. That's one way to distinguish them. Okay, we've come off on another one of those little river loops, and there's not too much action down in the riverbed. But at the end of the loop, there's two magnificent tall trees that are a type of tree known as a leadwood, Latin name Combretum imberbe. And the one on the left is still fully living, and it's got that very rough bark that you can see there, Pukela. But the one on the right, what can you tell me about that?
The one on the right, I can see it looks like it's dying or something. I don't know, I'm not sure about that.
All the bark has been stripped, and what has happened here is an elephant has come along and they feed on the bark and they strip it off. They use their tusks and they pull these huge, you can see the ones that have fallen on the side of the tree. It pulls that off, and they're stripped all the way around the tree, so because of that the tree will die. And that's the kind of damage that elephant can do. Because we're in drought conditions at the moment, you can see there's a tree that's been pushed over. Elephants can be quite destructive if their numbers, even if their numbers don't get too high. That's just how they are. They're big animals. They need to feed and take in a lot of stuff. But yeah, there's a classic example of the damage that elephant can do by completely stripping the bark off. So the tree on our left is a sort of a rich grey colour, and it's got all those little rivulets in the bark. And the one on the right is stripped, so it's like a golden colour, which is underneath the grey bark. That's what happens when you sort of peel the bark away, what you get left with. And I said it was called leadwood, the tree. The reason it's called leadwood is because it's got a very heavy, dense, compact wood that if you put it in water, it sinks. Most wood, you put it in water, it'll float, but not the leadwood. And that's how it got its name. Wow, we're very lucky we've just come across a leopard. Lying down, quite out in the open, quite exposed. I'm going to turn off. Describe to the listeners what you're seeing there, Pukela.
Oh, it's a leopard lying down, and it's a fresh looking, very healthy leopard.
Yeah, quite lying, a big one.
So. Quite a big one, lying down, relaxing. Yeah. And it seems it doesn't even notice that there are people looking at him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a couple of cars have just driven past him.
Yeah.
Which suggests they didn't spot him.
Yes.
Yeah, he seems very comfortable, very relaxed. And like you say, in quite good condition.
Yeah.
Now, for those listeners who don't know what a leopard is, it's one of the big five, which are the five animals most desired to be seen by public. And it's based on, in the olden days when there was big game hunting, they were seen as the five animals that were the most challenging to hunt and kill. So they're quite dangerous animals. A medium-sized cat, a lovely golden colored fur with not spots but rosettes on their pattern, sort of dark rosettes. And I think that open safari vehicle is driven right past it too. People aren't seeing it. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
this is a leopard sighting, boys and girls.
Yeah,
and you're missing it.
It's lying down, people, and
it is in there. I think that we're stopping for something else.
Yeah. They don't see it. Yeah.
It's four vehicles that have driven past. I've whipped out my camera in the meantime, so I'm going to take a couple of photographs. But I was telling Pukela yesterday that the Skukuza area has got one of the highest leopard densities on the planet, if not the highest. So if you want to see leopard in the wild, come to Skukuza. Now, the leopard's now lifted its head, and actually it's not in as good condition as we thought. It's lost an ear. You see that, Pukela? It's only got the one ear.
Can I see?
Take the Vanox.
The one on the right, on its right,
it's
on our left.
Yeah. It's right-hand ear, on the left as we look at it. It's got a missing ear. You see that?
Yeah, I can see it.
So it's probably been wounded in a territorial fight with another leopard. Definitely got some damage there, and yet another car driving past. Oh no, they spotted it, I think. And can you see just above it is that little black bird that's known as a fork-tailed drongo, and they're very bold and aggressive birds despite their small size.
Okay.
And they're getting a bit agitated and showing the presence of the leopard. But there he's looking straight back at us now. And let's see his wounded head. And he's up. But he is a big boy, and that we were right about that. Big male leopard. And now skulking off. But apart from his missing ear, he seems to be in fairly good condition. He's certainly been feeding well, he's not all emaciated. So yeah, maybe he's just a battle-hardened dude who's been wounded in territorial fights. Good. Okay, we have stopped for a moment on the Sabi River high-level bridge, which is along the route between Skukuza and Lower Sabi, because there's quite a lot of activity to describe to you. If you can hear that screeching in the background, that's a pair of pied kingfishers, little black and white birds that feed on fish, and they are flying over the river at the moment. But there's a lot of other activity. There's a couple of hippopotamuses that are out of the water because it's still fairly cool. It's a cool day. There's a couple of crocodiles in the water and quite a number of water birds. What else can you see, Pokela, anyway?
Yeah, I can see two hippos. The one on the outside, the one lying down. And next to... there's an ox eater on top of the
yeah, an ox pecker. Ooh, and ox pecker. Look at that brown bird that's flying down there. That's yes. Called a hummercorp.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
A type of bird that sort of feeds on frogs and fish and things like that. Okay. Oh, there's one of the Goliath herons. Look at that enormous big bird flying in.
Yeah.
But the hummercorp, which means hammerhead, is a crazy looking bird. It's got this big fat head that looks like the top of a mallet, and it's a uniform brown color, and it's just flown away, but it's drifted out of sight. But yeah, that Goliath heron that we stopped and looked at earlier, not the same one because we're quite a bit further downriver, but another one has landed. But you're talking about the hippo with the oxpeckers.
Oxpecker, yes.
Oxpeckers are birds that feed on ticks and other parasites that feed on the animals in the park, and most of the sort of, particularly the antelope, the buffalo, the rhino, giraffe, and here hippo are wonderful hosts for these birds, and they do a good job. So it's not a case of parasitism. It's a case of mutualism, where both animals benefit. The oxpecker gets a food source from the animals, and the animals get their bodies cleaned of parasites like ticks and other things that feed on their blood. And they're a sort of medium-sized bird, probably about the size of your clenched fist, a sort of browny color. And there's two types in the park, one called the red-billed oxpecker, which predictably has a red bill, and then the yellow-billed oxpecker, which has a yellow bill. The red-billed oxpecker are the commoner ones, and that's what we've got here feeding on the hippo. But look how that Goliath heron is stalking across the rocks.
It feeds on fish.
It feeds on fish.
Okay.
But it's got such a wonderful way of walking and skulking. Okay. You can see how it's got a long curved neck,
yes,
and it's just wading across the rocks, looking at the pools and if it sees a fish, we'll see it sort of strike, and it's got a sort of lightning strike. It'll uncoil its neck and stab it into the water. And what's nice, because it's cooler conditions today, it's quite a chilly wind, the hippo are a lot, their sort of feeding period is a lot more, and they're out of the water instead of being submerged to sort of escape the sort of rays of the sun. So it's quite nice to see them out and foraging. But I don't know if the listeners will be able to pick up the sort of running of the river here. Most of the river is quite a slow moving river, but it's just going over some rocks at the section of the river, so it's sort of cascading down. It's a real bubbling effect as the and fast moving water and churning and churning up as it goes over the rocks. And then you can see just over that channel there's a lot of those aerial birds feeding. Those are swallows that have just returned from further up north in Africa, where they've spent our winter, and they'll come here for the summer months, where they'll breed. And then, did you see that croc?
There's a croc.
Okay, you see where that little brown bird,
yeah,
which on the rock, that's a water thickney. But then just behind it, if you pass the binocs, let's check that it's still there. Yeah, about 5 meters, maybe a bit more, 6 or 7 meters. There's a croc that looks like just a submerged log.
Okay.
And it's just lying in the water, waiting for opportunities. It feeds on fish. It might feed. It's not a huge croc. It's sort of a medium-sized croc. You see it?
Yeah. Is it moving now? Oh,
it's just going under the water now.
Okay.
So you're quite right. So I think the water's quite shallow now, and that Goliath heron is now walking towards it. So I suspect there's quite a bit of fish in those pools, and both the croc and the heron are competing for the same
same meal.
Okay, we're still on the high level bridge. We've just moved further along. The whole bridge in total is probably about 500 meters long. And we were looking at the hippopotamus just now in the sort of main river channel. But as you move further along at this time of year, it's predominantly sandy, dry conditions. And in the middle of the river, probably about 500 meters from where we are on the bridge, there are a couple of lion doing what lions do best and just lying down, having a snooze. I can only see two female at the moment lionesses, which suggests that there's probably a pride, and just the angle that we're at in terms of the contours of the ridge, there's only those two in sight, but I suspect there'll be two or three more. But have you not seen them yet, Pukela?
No, not yet.
Okay, you see you've got that ridge that runs fairly straight along the whole length, and then you've got sandy plain on the right of that side and then sandy plain on the left. If you just take the binoculars and go along, at the moment they're sort of lying down flat, so it's very difficult to pick up any detail. But if you get to, you see that in the distance is that tall dark green tree. It's one of the tallest on the horizon.
Yeah.
Then if you come just in front of it to that that ridge that goes along the riverbed, then that's where they're lying. Okay, Pukela and I have just spent the last 10 minutes for me trying to show him where the lions were lying down, because they're just so camouflaged and they're not doing anything, they're just lying there. But we've moved a little bit further along the road on top of the bridge, so we've got a slightly better angle, so it wasn't just the ears that one could pick up, it's now the full body.
Yeah.
But it was a hard slog, but eventually he managed to locate them. So what are you seeing now, Pakela?
Yeah, I see two female lioness lying down. Yeah, I can see them, two.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, I can't see them, man. Just lying there, doing anything.
Yeah, no, most of the time lion are pretty boring, they're just lying around. But yeah, I mean, these two will probably be there all day. It's a cool day, so they're comfortable, they've got their spot, and I don't think there's going to be too much activity. But the you never know.
The way I saw them, I think they're still young, maybe two or 3 years.
Let's have a look.
Yeah, you can have a look. You can see them as big.
Yeah, the one, they're both actually sitting up now.
They're up.
Yeah. And they're looking away from each other. No, I think they're sort of mature adult females.
Is it?
Yeah. They just look small because they're so far away.
Oh.
Probably, like I said earlier, about 400-500 meters from where we are. Okay, we had to change our route slightly. We were running out of time. We got to the high level bridge and we spent a lot of time there and also seeing the leopard earlier. So instead of going on towards Lower Sabi, we actually crossed the Sabi River and headed north and linked up with the road back to Skukuza along the Sand River. And we've just stopped at the Mutlumuvi dry river bed, which is also a bridge, and we've got a wonderful view out over the Sand River, which is a non-perennial river. That means that it doesn't flow all year round, just in the rainy season. So now in the winter time it's completely dry and it's just full, as the name suggests, of sand. And there's a hippo carcass that is in the dry river bed below us, and then there's a whole lot of vultures that have probably been feeding on that carcass and perhaps other carcasses in the area, and are just trying to sort of take off. But because it's not a warm day, they're battling to become airborne, so they're having to use the sort of wind to get enough uplift, because vultures are very big, heavy birds that struggle to get airborne. And yeah, so a whole lot of them are sort of lying down in the sand, sort of preening themselves, and others are using the sort of crosswinds to try and take off and get airborne. And the chances are, with all the carcasses around, that there might be one or two predators just lying in the shade of the trees. Okay, we've just pulled over at the side of the road because there's quite a curious but tiny little bird that's making its way through the roadside scrub. It's called a green-backed Camaroptera. And you can hear it's making that bleating noise. Its old name used to be bleating bush warbler, but they've recently globalized the name and it's now called a green-backed Camaroptera. Tiny little bird with green back and grey cap on its head and then paler underparts, and it'll make that noise all day. There it is.
Yeah,
you see it making its way through the undergrowth and just chattering away. Okay, we just stopped on the low level bridge over the Sand River. There's a small little pool of water and it's very still, running quite deep, and we've just stopped. And we're about 10 meters or so from a hippo. It's just lying in the shallows. And directly above it is a pied kingfisher, just sitting on a branch waiting for opportunities to catch a fish. There's also a terrapin on the far side. Ooh, and a big croc. Two big crocs. And a black crake. Lots of activity. Black crake is a tiny little bird, the size of a small chicken, that lives in reeds. It's a jet black color, and it's got a yellow beak and red legs. It skulks through the shallows. The terrapin is a type of freshwater turtle that is found in sort of watery areas all around the park. And the crocodiles we've talked about already, those prehistoric dinosaurs. But the one next to the terrapin is huge. Looks as if it's probably about 5 meters long. You see it up against
yeah,
the...
Yeah, I can see. quick question. Since crocodiles feed on meat, don't they eat these hippos in the water? How do they both stay in the same water?
Yeah, the hippo... Just going to start the engine because there's a car coming the other way. The hippo are too big really for the crocodile.
Okay.
I would imagine that there's possibilities that a sort of young baby hippo might well be taken by the odd croc when times are tough, but there seems to be almost a mutual understanding between hippos and crocs that they leave each other alone. Also, with crocs not having a sort of complex tooth thing, they've only got sort of shredding teeth that they will use to sort of grip their prey. They would probably struggle to manage to break down a hippo carcass. But having said all that, when a hippo dies in water areas, and I've seen this, the crocs do feed on the hippo carcass, but they have to get hold of some flesh with their jaws, and then they twist around. That's the only way they can sort of tear off some strips of meat for them to swallow. But yeah, I have seen it, and they actually sort of will hollow out inside the hippo carcass and eat the sort of softer inside bits that are there. And yeah, but I don't know about ever actually catching the hippo.
Okay.
Anyway, and I'm just looking now. There's a little tiny bird known as chin spot batis. You see it?
Oh yeah.
A little black and white bird with a chestnut band across its white breast, and it's got quite a characteristic call. I think keep the recorder running, because I think if we're lucky we might get to hear it. It makes a call, three blind mice.
Can you hear it?
Three blind mice.
Oh yeah. Nice. Three blind mice.
That's also a tiny little bird, not much bigger than the size of your thumb. And they tend to move around in feeding flocks where they sort of will eat insects and stuff that they can glean along the leaves and branches of trees. And they very often feed in mixed parties with other bird species. So if you're out in the bush and you're looking for birds, and you come across a mixed feeding group of different species of birds, the chin spot batis is very often one of the types that is found in those groups. Okay, we've just stopped next to the side of the road, next to one of the commonest but prettiest birds that are found throughout Kruger. It's called a lilac-breasted roller. This one's just got its back to us at the moment, but it's got an amazing lilac, light purple throat, and then a sort of cinnamon color on its sort of side of its face, and then azure blue on the back of its neck and at the end of its wings and on its tail, and then a big fluffy white eyebrow. So yeah, a real combination of vivid bright colors, and especially when you see it in direct sunlight, it's an incredibly beautiful bird. Quite a long elephant tail, not elegant tail, and the reason it's called a roller is that when it's breeding and displaying, it's got a wonderful display flight where it sort of tumbles in midair, doing sort of cartwheels and rolls, and hence the name roller. And the lilac-breasted roller is found in the park throughout the year. There are four other species of roller that you get in the park. One of them is migratory and only found here in the northern winter or summertime. That's the European roller, which isn't quite as colourful. So our resident lilac-breasted roller is the most colourful of all.